Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, April 11th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can then turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And if you would like to have some input or get some feedback and you do not have the access to call or prefer not to call live, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And or you can email Jeannie at jeannie at whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you in that format, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so that you can listen back to the archive of the show for your feedback or input. And we're greatly appreciative any time anybody chooses to do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service And that's just a whole lot easier to do when you know how these things are landing for you, what you're finding most useful, and how we might then endeavor to do more of that. So we have plenty of time for today for comments and questions. We've been working through the Way of Mastery very slowly. We've also been commenting on the similarities between the messages in the Way of Mastery and a number of other books that I get access to and read on a regular basis. And one of the more focused ones this time around is Anthony DeMello's book, Awareness. And I ran into another person yesterday, as a matter of fact, who is really enjoying Anthony DeMello's book, Awareness, and has it in rotation in his reading or listening. And I was talking to him about how similar my experience is of the work that Anthony DeMello does to the work that Krishnamurti did when he was alive, and the books that he's had written about him, and the lectures that he has given that are available either through YouTube or on certain websites. And the key to the similarity for me is just the consistency. There's no deviation. Once there's an observation that's been made, the observation is made every time in every situation. And I'm willing to keep coming back to my observation. I'm willing to become aware, awake to the fact that I'm dropping into thought or shifting back into a belief. And then instantly, or as soon as I catch that, I want to be willing to move back into observation. Because in observation mode, I'm awake and I'm aware and I'm as close as I can be to be present in the moment. And I have the best access to the best data that's available in the moment. And any time that I shift back into belief or some kind of an automatic response to something, if I've been triggered to any kind of an emotional upset, that's an indication that I'm not awake and aware in the moment. That's an indication that whatever my mind is serving up for me is from the past. It's based in a lie if it's not completely false. And it's not about what's going on in the present moment. And the more I practice awareness of that system, the more I deeply appreciate how consistent the positive results I get are when I understand if I'm in pain, I'm in error. The way that Michael Rice says it in his most recent worksheet is, if I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. In original worksheets 20-some years ago when I got into this work, the line was, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. And I used it to great advantage as a kind of a mantra in my life, something I just repeated daily, especially when any kind of an upset would arise. And these days, I am recognizing more and more how deeply I've benefited through the years by recognizing that truth, by recognizing that if I'm in any kind of physical, mental, or emotional discomfort, it's really useful for me to say, okay, where am I off the mark here? How am I creating this? What's the status in my body? Is it tight or is it tense? How might I shift that experience by just calming myself and taking a few deep breaths with a long, slow exhale? And the benefits that have accrued in my life from practicing that on a regular basis are just way beyond what words can describe. So that's one thing I would mention. The other thing I wanted to mention today is that while the website for Journey's Dream is having some technical difficulties, the podcast platforms are still making available the most recent podcast that I did, which published on Tuesday, apparently. And it's a podcast interview with a young woman named Kelly Jensen. And Kelly edited a book titled Don't Call Me Crazy. And I think it's a pretty doggone good interview. I think it's a wonderful book. I think if you have someone in your life who is a teacher, it might be a good reference for them. If you know somebody who is a young adult and they're intelligent, and either they have friends that have mental health challenges or they've had some mental health challenges, it might be a wonderful resource for them. It's you know, the title of the book is Don't Call Me Crazy. The subtitle is 33 Voices for the Conversation in Mental Health or something to that effect. And when I listened back to it after it published, I was quite pleased with how she represents herself. And I've already gained benefit myself from reading the book and having it as a resource to refer to people. So when the technology is updated, you can find out about that at theonyourmindpodcast.org or onyourmindpodcast.org or journeysdream.org. But for the past couple of days, their website's been down. So if you go to your, wherever you get your podcasts, if you are subscribed to that, you can listen there, or you can search for On Your Mind Podcast through wherever you get your episodes. And it works through my Apple Podcast on my phone, so even though the website is down, I can still access the podcast, and it's only about 39 minutes in total. And again, that's Kelly Jensen, and her book is Don't Call Me Crazy, 33 Voices Start the Conversation About Mental Health. And as always, if you get access to that and listen to it, we're open for feedback. Area code 610, you're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim. I did get to listen to that. I woke up very early this morning and found it on there. And so it must have been after that that the website went down. But it is a wonderful talk, a good interview. I want to get that book. I want to read the part especially about OCD and share it with my one of my grandsons, who is very receptive to stuff right now. So I agree with you. It's really good. And I love that she intended it for young adults and that everybody's liking it. We're all young adults or less, whatever. But anyway, yeah, I just wanted to say it's really good, worth listening to.
Thank you. I'm glad you found that valuable. I, as I said, and I said it in the interview with her, I was surprised to hear that she had intended it for young audiences because it was
yeah.
speaking directly to me as a therapist with now 50 years experience doing therapy. So I'm glad you liked it.
Yep, very much. That's all I wanted to say, so I'll get off the phone and you can carry on.
All right, I will mute you so you can listen in, and I'll invite anybody else who's on that, even if we talked to you yesterday or you haven't spoken in a while, to press 1. Let us know how we can support you. 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. What would be a useful way to spend this next hour? As I have mentioned, I have been working with quite a few people who are in various stages of dealing with major life issues, discomfort, physical problems, fading parents, financial issues, job issues, and many of them have far more things going in their life that they could choose to be grateful for, that they could choose deep appreciation for the whole of their life and many specifics in their life, and yet they don't. And my life experience has proven to me over and over again that my daily experience of life is always enhanced when I choose to shift the focus away from the things that I don't appreciate in my life to whatever, even if it's just a few things that I can appreciate. It's kind of like a mental reset, and it, my experience has been that it protects me from wasting a lot of energy on things I don't have any control over and helps me generate energy from that appreciation, from that gratitude, whichever word you want to use that works best for you. For some of us, those words are interchangeable. For others, they have special meanings. And yet, it is my experience that the negative emotional states are an energy drain, and any neutral or positive emotional state either provides energy or allows me to go tap into other sources of energy. So I am grateful that I had the life experiences that led me to these teachers who know the benefit of choosing again, choosing for the positive. The way Course in Miracles talks about it, choosing for love over fear. The way Way of Mastery talks about it over and over again, choosing to be aware that what you choose to focus your mind energy on directs the creative process of your life experience. I had somebody yesterday who was working on a worksheet, and they had spent most of their time in the worksheets they've done really locked in the intellectual, trying to map it out, trying to find words for it. And when I listened to Dick Schwartz, who is the creator of Internal Family Systems, when I listened to him on the podcast titled We Can Do Hard Things recently, I got a nice little nudge into these different ways that you can help a person drop out of what they're thinking and drop into what they're feeling physically or emotionally. And if you go back to the processing that Celinda did, I guess it was a week ago yesterday, Wednesday of last week, and you listen to that processing that she did, not so much the actual worksheet process itself, but the processing after it, I believe what you'll see is the benefit that happens when you just keep asking yourself, okay, so what am I feeling now? And then make a note of it. What am I feeling now? Whether it's a physical sensation or an emotion. What am I feeling now? Whether it's a temperature shift or a tension in the muscles. I had somebody in the Tuesday night group ask about, what is the process of disassociation? And if somebody disassociates, what's happening there? And my response was that dissociation is this, it's a word for this process that people engage in kind of automatically. If they have a certain level of intelligence and they have a traumatic situation or a situation that they're mind-body-energy system reaches a conclusion, this is too much, I can't handle this, the person will start to create a mental, emotional, sometimes even a physical distance between themselves and whatever they're thinking of in that moment as being unsafe. And in the extreme, people have a sense of leaving their bodies. Like they can literally get a sense that they are floating up above their body in the corner of a room looking back down on themselves, either as they're crying alone in their bed and no one's coming to comfort them, or they're being physically beaten or sexually assaulted. That's an extreme case. And the most extreme cases, people just lose all sense of what's happening. And while their body is there going through something, they have no memory of it. So they will, quote, wake up, close quotes, an hour or two or three later and have no memory of where they were and what they did. Other people with them can recount what happened. There's evidence that they were someplace and did something. In the most extreme cases, it can be called a fugue state, where there's just this complete lack of conscious awareness of what has happened. And in the most mild case, it's just, I'm just tuning people out. I'm just choosing to distance myself mentally or emotionally from this interaction with somebody. And again, this is just me using my mind energy to create a certain experience. And for a lot of people, it happens, as I mentioned, without any conscious awareness that the process has been engaged. And it's relevant because in Anthony DeMello's book, the title of it is Awareness. And the key is that awareness as an, a state of mind, as a lack of judgment, as a lack of rigidity, being open and in the flow, is exactly what the Way of Mastery is calling us to do. from the first lesson where it calls us to be aware that we only experience the effects of our choices, whether they're conscious or unconscious, whether they happen at the soul level or they happen at the conscious physical level, and then moving on into the third lesson where the way of mastery introduces us to the concept that every time we judge anything, we're moving out of alignment, out of the flow of life itself. And so the actual process for awakening in Way of Mastery is dismantling all judgments, dismantling the veils or the distortions that we put into place, whether we're conscious of it or not, but we put these veils or distortions into place every time we judge whatever is unfolding in our lives as either good or bad, right or wrong, horrible or lovely. And whether we realize it or not, in that process of judging, we are abstracting ourselves. We are stepping back from the state of pure open allowance and surrender. So, as we move back into the Way of Mastery, where we left off the last time, we were reading into the Way of Transformation, the lesson 16 that is titled The Birth of Egoic Consciousness. And it's trying to give us a sense of what we can't really know at an intellectual level. We might have some deep, I don't even know what words to use for it, a deep experience of the soul, of consciousness, of, you know, an inspiration. But when those things happen, people call them different things. They call them moments of awakening or a God experience or... But whenever they happen, people have great difficulty finding words to describe it to other people. Because it seems to exist at different levels at the same time. So it seems like it lasted for forever, and it seems like it was a blink of an eye. So there's a sense of time distortion. There's a sense of it being more real than anything they had experienced in their life before, and yet it seems unreal in a different sense. So in lesson 16, they're just trying to use some words to point in a direction of the fact that who you are as an entity, as a consciousness, separate from the person that you have all of these labels for, that you have descriptions for when you look in the mirror, separate from all of that, your essence, consciousness, that isn't tied to gender, that isn't tied to any political affiliation, that isn't tied to an age or a sense of physical vitality. Your essence as consciousness existed before any physical matter. And so it's been introducing us to this idea of consciousness shifting and playing with consciousness. And then at one point in time, there was the thought, hey, my consciousness itself said, hey, I wonder if I can create a sense of being separate from myself. And so it's playing with that at some point in time, again, before there were any planets or any physical experience of any kind of depth of time or space. And it says the concept of separation, the experience of being separate from self, was born at that level. As soul continues the extension of light as pure creativity, it begins to condense. It condenses and descends to the next level, where soul, where energy, where consciousness is just creating an experience for itself. And so separation at that most fundamental level, and an experience of myself as separate from myself, the ability to step back and watch my thoughts. Dr. Michael Rice says, the observer apart from the observed, the thinker apart from the thoughts, the feeler apart from the feeling. He rattles it off. That's where this was born, before there was ever any physical body. And this is creation itself. This is the creator itself, creating an experience of separation just to play, just to have these various experiences. And then it talks about the section where we left off is the creation of the physical universe. And that reads, in this multidimensionality, which is still pervaded and is capital L light itself, the condensation continues. And here's where your scientists begin to tap into it. Many levels into the process of consciousness playing with itself, playing with awareness at different levels and creating a sense of separation. Here's where your scientists finally begin to tap into it. So you can see how many steps they are removed. But here's where light begins to condense into the particle of matter. Again, the explosion occurs as the one basic atom, A-T-O-M, or Adam, capital A-D-A-M, it explodes into the Big Bang. And then the multitude of bodies, of planetary bodies, including your own central sun and your tiny little universe, is birthed. The physical universe of which you are a part as a human being is vast beyond comprehension. And yet, it's the same as a tiny speck of dust. So this is what we're talking about. It seems to be a paradox. It seems to be impossible. But it only seems that way because we have such a limited perspective. We're trying to follow the rules that we were taught in our conscious logical mind by our language, limited by physicality, etc. And then we can't make sense of something and we say, well, that can't be true. But imagine that you have a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old that you've been teaching language to, and all of a sudden you start to explain to them how, you know, when you were younger, you went on a jet plane and you traveled across the ocean and you climbed a mountain, and they've got no way to comprehend it. It seems impossible to them. So our level of understanding about our true nature is less than that of a kindergarten student trying to comprehend particle physics at the highest level that's known today. Less than that. There's so much more for us to experience and expand into that logic and thought cannot take us there. So it says the physical universe that you are a part of as a human being is vast beyond comprehension, and in the same moment it is as tiny as a speck of dust. It is like a tiny speck of light floating seemingly freely, like a tiny drop of milk that seems to have been separated from the body of milk. It's unaware of the multidimensionality of radiant light, capital L light, and capital S spirit. and creation itself in which it floats, out of which it has been given its very existence. You, therefore, are not outside of capital S spirit. You as your physical self, you as your consciousness, non-physically, are held lovingly. Your whole physical dimension is held lovingly in the center of consciousness and spirit. As this condensation continues, what you have been told to call, quote, life, close quotes, begins. So in this sense, it means physical life. And conditions are set up emerging from what? From pure chance? Hardly. It emerges out of the pure potentiality, the pure power, and the perfect intelligence to create. Again, this is another thing that other teachings, other books say over and over again. If it seems impossible, if it seems paradoxical, all that means is my viewpoint in that moment is only partial. So if it seems impossible to me that light can be both a particle and a wave, and that seems impossible, it's simply because my viewpoint is so limited in that moment. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot more going on. The word particle, the word wave, these are just words I use to describe something. They are not the actuality. And in that moment that I say I'm tracking a particle or I'm tracking a wave and I'm watching its effects, I'm swimming in a sea of potentiality that goes infinitely beyond my ability to comprehend it. So this life that you're experiencing, these teachings say it's not happening by chance. The text goes on here and says, although now the creativity is expressing itself more and more, out of this tension that's created by the using the life force energy and consciousness to generate fear, as it's talked about earlier in these lessons. So more and more creation is coming not just out of pure love, pure extension, pure joy, pure smooth flow. It's coming more and more out of this contraction away from pure life, pure energy, pure love. The text says, it's like taking a note of a flute and muffling it slightly so that it has a different quality. And yet it is still just pure energy. And then it asks the question, so because what can fear be but energy? Everything is energy. Everything comes from this initial source. There is no separation. These are the teachings of our physicists and our great spiritual teachers. So what can fear be but this energy? This energy that's been contracted or used in a different way. The text goes on and says, just as love is energy, compassion is energy, sadness and anger are energy. Do you see? Fear is just an energy and nothing more. In itself, it is perfectly neutral because all events are neutral. And fear, being merely a dance or a play of energy itself, must be an entirely neutral event until something arises to perceive and experience it differently. And what would that be? That would be egoic consciousness. And when that happens, fear has taken its final form. And there can be no further condensation of the energy that has become fear. For egoic consciousness is fearful consciousness. Ego is fear. Yet, It is made of pure power, pure potentiality, pure unlimited creativity, just as everything else is. Because in ways our minds cannot comprehend, there is only one. It is all connected. So the text here goes on and says, rest assured, you all have the experience of knowing just how ceaselessly creative the egoic mind can be. For without ceasing, it knows how to immediately look upon another brother or sister or an event or anything, and just that fast, in the twinkling of an eye, in a space that does not even require a thought, egoic consciousness can change its values. It can change its perceptions to create whatever it wants to create. And what it wants to create is that which, whatever it is, that will continue its existence. Much like in your physical body, when a cell becomes cancerous and decides to run amok, and act as though it were not dependent on the laws of the body that keep the body healthy, so it begins to do what? It begins to create more cells just like itself. Cancer is merely a misperception run amok at the level of the body that is thinking for itself, creating in its own image, rather than extending the image of the Creator, capital C, Creator, rather than living out of harmony with the one mind that creates in radiant joy. That one mind that creates in radiant joy does so for no other reason than to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. And yet, creation does not create limitation, and therefore creation does not withdraw creativity from the power of the ego. Rather, because creation is love, all power under heaven and earth is available and can be tapped into by the egoic consciousness as a creation of consciousness. So what is egoic consciousness? You all know what it feels like to be absolutely certain that you're separate, that you are alone, and that you must rely on your own thinking process, and that no one, not just beyond the boundary of your own body or skin, but no one even beyond your unique contracted sense of I has any connection to you whatsoever, and that no one cares. You know the ideas that are wrapped around feeling lost and alone and isolated and lonely. And you lament with quotes like, I'm alone, I'm separate, how on earth am I going to make it? I've got to figure out my own way. I've got to figure out how this world works. I've got to make it all happen for myself, close quotes. When this happens, fear has taken its final form. And now there is a complete forgetting of the creation and the oneness. Forgetting capital S spirit, even forgetting of my soul, a connected source of consciousness. And then the body represents a level of vibration, which is still quite intelligent, still very intelligent, yet it is a matrix of energy, the very thought of condensation into human form, out of which forms keep getting created. You have done that for yourself an infinite number of times. The body is the representation of the ego. For notice, just now as you sit in your chair, you're quite certain that you are not the same as the wall across from you. Your awareness tells you that you're the reader of this, not the author of this experience you're having. And you think, quote, no, not me. I couldn't do that if I wanted to. Certainly, it makes Yeshua very special, but I'm just a blob of dust. I'm the separate mind body sitting in a chair listening to words which vibrate with a certain meaning and create certain pictures and understandings in my mind. But these things are being placed within me. I'm not that one. I'm not the capital O one. I'm not connected to my source, close quotes. That kind of sentence, thought pattern, limitation, that is egoic consciousness. And it's what says, I am not connected to my source. I am not that one. I am not God. I am not pure spirit. I am not pure soul. I'm this simple little thing that's sitting in a chair here listening to this. And do you know something? This text says, do you know something? You're absolutely right. You are that simple little thing sitting in that chair, limited by time and space. And you are that and so much more. The egoic mind is that which creates the separated perception that there is only one tiny, thin slice of the pie. The egoic mind creates the delusion, a distortion in consciousness itself, like a little bit of a blip on a radar screen that tells the person who's watching the screen that there's something out there. The egoic mind says, quote, I am separate, I am alone, I cannot think with the mind of the Creator, I cannot experience unity consciousness, I cannot be as Yeshua is. Nope, nope, not me. I'm too small, too weak. I just don't have it together yet. Well, maybe someday, close quotes. And yet, all the while, in absolute truth, you remain connected to your source. You are, capital T, that, capital O, one. By the power of that one, you have the potential to think the thought that you're separate. That the actual power that you're saying to yourself you don't have is the power that gives you the ability to create the experience of being separate. And you think thoughts like, quote, I could never be like Yeshua. I'm really too small. I'm too fragile, too weak, and too stupid. Well, you know, Christ consciousness may be there for someone else, but not for me, close quotes. Try to wrap your mind around this. They're saying in order to make that thought and have that experience, you're using the very power that your thought is telling you you don't have access to. And the whole while, the text goes on and says, the whole while that very thought is using the power of the one mind. It's using the power of creation, for that power is capital L life. That power is pure being. That power is the actual world, the real world. That power is the only thing that exists in truth, period. And by the power of that one, that one mind, you as consciousness have used that power and have dreamt the thought of a separate self. By the power that created you, the use of that very power that you used to create this temporary experience of being lost and separated and lonely, by that very power, when you decide to, you will use that same power to awaken from the thought of egoic consciousness. Now, they ask the question, why is this important? And the answer is, beloved friends, the way of transformation requires that there be that which exists in form, transformation. You exist in form. You are sitting in a chair. you know the volume and space of a human body. You know the particular thoughts that you identify as your own. You have a history to that body-mind that emerged from a sexual desire between two human beings called parents whenever they got together. And then a little thing wiggled its way up to touch another thing, and there was a burst of light, a pure spark of pure soul that made a decision from intentionality to become fixated or identified with and as a physical form. That was your experience coming into form. The text goes on and says, so having a good time on a Saturday night is the source of your being as a bodily being. And if you were lucky, both parents consciously desired to use the body as a communication device for teaching only love. And they gave unto one another. And then they accepted that little spark of light that begins yet the birthing of another body. And then they clearly invited another soul to come and abide with them as a teacher and a friend, as a brother and a sister. And the text says, unfortunately, that is as yet rare on your planet. And yet that is the matrix into which you have descended time and time again as you have come to teach yourself that you are just a separate, lonely, failing, weak individual. And at the death of the body, you found yourself as a soul, and you've been frightened by the radiance of your light, because that light is not the same as the interpretation that you had learned of yourself. Here's the thing about fear. Fear causes condensation, contraction, failing, if you will. And what you fall into is a matrix of energy that best resonates with your own perception and your own belief about yourself. Belief is not just thought. It is a quality of vibration. And you fall yet again into a field of energy, into a dream, into a physical universe, into a time frame, into a family structure that resonates and vibrates with how you've learned to perceive yourself. All the while, you are still capital T, that, capital O, one, that one, the one mind, part of the one mind, part of the creation itself. You are radiant. You are perfectly free. You're using the very power of creation itself to create and believe in a dream of smallness, in a dream of weakness, separation, and loneliness. Right now, as you hear these very words, now, in this moment, that's what you're doing. You're choosing how you will think of yourself. And how you think of yourself is reflected in the world that you see, in the experiences that are manifest within your own particular universe of consciousness. And again, this is why a worksheet process can be of use. Because you're the one creating your experience of life. Right now, as you hear these very words, this is what you're doing. You're choosing how you will think about yourself. And as we talked about this, Dr. Schwartz and his internal family systems work talks about various parts. And how there's no bad parts. Every part of us that came into being as an answer to a problem that we were experiencing at an earlier time in our lives when we didn't feel we had any better way to deal with it. And so we created a part of ourselves, which is just a constellation of thoughts. And that constellation of thought says, hey, there's another wounded part of me over here that's very fragile and I need to protect it, so I'm going to distract the other consciousness away from it by creating some kind of drama and trauma. It's just a constellation of thoughts. You are not your thoughts about yourself. You are not the image you see in the mirror. You are pure consciousness. You are the energy of the one mind of creation and love expressing in form. And everything else is false. Everything else you've been trained into, everything else you've created on your own as a way to cope with things that seem to be too intense to deal with directly, every aspect of your thoughts about yourself is partial. It's limited. It's built from the egoic consciousness. It's built upon the foundation of the dream of separation. And yet, for those people who like logic, there is nothing more illogical than the idea that you can become separated from the source that gave you experience, existence. There's nothing more illogical than thinking you can separate the wave from the ocean. You've never been separated from your creator. Any religions, any philosophies, any theologies that talk to you about being evil and damaged and broken, they're false. They have to be false because there's no sense to the idea that you could be separate from that which gave rise to you any more than you could capture a wave in a bucket and take it home and show your friends and have a wave. You've got no wave. You can't separate the wave from the ocean. You can't separate your consciousness from all of consciousness. So, I have gratitude for everybody who's on the call, listening. I'm reminded that we have another support group happening tonight. It's a Thursday night, so from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, it's absolutely free. If you or anybody you know might benefit, all the information you would need to join us is available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website. I have done what I can to make it clear that there's no financial investment needed, and The Zoom login information is there, and if you can download the Zoom app to your phone or your laptop, you're free to join us. 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And I will look forward to chatting or seeing any of you there or anybody you might refer. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. Everything else is false. And I will turn on the microphone for and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, April the 11th, 2024. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a moment to dial in. And I will just say that we've had awesome acceptance or whatever you want to call it on Podbean. We've been having a lot of downloads and visits to that site as well as on our website. And if you go to whyagain.org and then click on Kaboris underneath it, you will see there is a section that says Enlightenment Study. And in that are the archives since we started. I think today we are on day 60. So, we have a couple of hands up, but let's give Michael just a moment to dial in, and then we'll take our callers. So we are glad that you've joined us, and Michael's dialing in. We do have two callers already with hands up. So hang on just a moment, and we will get your microphones turned on, and we'll be glad to hear your comments or address any questions that you have. I did check. Michael said that if you were on the list where he sent the Easter story out, that it has been edited again. And so as he's editing it, you should get the automatic updates. When he finishes, we will have that on the website. We'll also be sending out a newsletter that'll have it in it, as well as the announcements of, you know, Michael's going to be in Sarasota, Florida, the part of May, and some information then also about the Quantum Skill Point intensives that he's doing. Those are personal one-on-one 3-day intensives here in Bristol, Virginia. And so if you need more information on that, it's actually already on the website, but we will be sending out a newsletter. So if you are not on our mailing list and you want to get the newsletter, go to the website, whyagain.org, and scroll all the way to the bottom, and you'll see a thing that says sign in to be in our newsletter and in our correspondence. And what that is you're giving us permission to send it to you. And that way you can't say that we bombarded your email and that you didn't request it. So we do need you to do that. You can also drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and give me your name and email address, and I will add you to the list from here. We use a program called Constant Contact. So when you do it on the website, it automatically adds you to the contact list, and that's where the email comes out of. So there's no question of spam or whatever. And so either way, let us know. Get on the mailing list. That newsletter will be going out as soon as he completes this article. And he's with us now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear hearts. There are a couple of other things that need to come together, too. There's the physician in Florida that had invited me to come down and do a weekend series of workshops, which we're going to do the end of May, pardon me, the first week of May. We're still working on seeing if we can solidify a date. He's on Instagram, and we're going to do an Instagram interview. So hopefully we'll get that date set, and we'll get that off to you. So if you want to listen to that, you'll be able to do it. And if you want to make plans to be in Sarasota, we're going to do Why Is This Happening to Me Again on Friday, the last Friday of May. And then an all-day mind shifters and still point breathing workshop on Saturday.
No, not the last Friday.
Okay, good. Glad you got it. I don't have it in front of me.
We are going to be there. You are going to be there on Friday, May the 3rd, and Saturday, May the 4th, and Sunday, May the 5th.
I was thinking it was before that we jumped into May, but great. Okay, so we'll be there in May. So hopefully the newsletter will contain a link or information about when Dr. John Lawrence and I will be doing an Instagram interview, and we'll have the information on that. And this article on Easter is growing. It's actually probably going to take me 2 years to finish it, so I'll keep renewing it as we go. I've decided I'm going to expand it out through the whole body. Basically, it's Yeshua in the first person saying, here's what I meant. Here's what I said. Here's why it's important. And so if you look at it today, actually, give it 24 hours. I've got a new edit of it ready to paste in there probably later. Maybe I'll do it before I finish the garden this morning. I was out in the dirt planting some new plants and working on a new native species bed that we're creating for native species plants and native habitat growing. So lots of things going on, but that article will ultimately become a book that I think will be titled, Will the Real Yeshua Please Stand Up? And we're going to look at why his Aramaic words are important. You know, when the ancient teachings say, the power of life and death is in your words, is in the tongue. It might be important to make sure you got the right words. It's just, you know. And I'll tell you, if Yeshua sat in most of what happens in the Western world in his name today, he'd say, that is all Greek to me. And I mean, really, seriously, so far out of line. So inadequate in giving people the benefit and the advantage of what this amazing teaching is, and why he doesn't say, no, notice lots of his folks say, yeah, see, him. He said, my words. They're your perfect life. Now, you go, well, hey, why, how does that work? What does that got to do? Well, if you understand a thing called regulatory speech, you understand that words literally regulate cellular chemistry, they regulate emotions, they regulate perception, and they regulate your creative process. So if you were brought up in a world with words of death, hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, blame, drama, and trauma, you're dying and you expect to die. My offering is you can reverse that. You don't have to do that. But you're going to have to change your whole vocabulary. You're going to have to change your whole conceptual structure. It is a process. It takes time. And so this article is going to go step by step through that whole process. And so that's what we're working on. And so let's say hello to our callers.
All right. The first one, I don't have this number in my phone book, so not sure who it is, but we want to welcome 212. You're on the air.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
I am good. Who we got?
My name is Bobby. And, Dr. Michael, I have some dear friends who are big fans of the show, both you and Jeannie. Could you say hello to my friends? They've been through a lot. Can you just say hello to Mrs. Dice and her son, Andrew?
Well, Andrew and Mrs. Dice, we not only say hello, but we definitely extend our love in your direction and our support and our caring. And, you know, knowing that we live in an energetic world, time and space mean nothing to the energy of active present love. And so we're extending it in your direction.
That's really special. So my question to you is, you know, Mother's Day is coming up, and my mom's been through quite a lot. She's suffered from depression and whatnot. And I actually turned her on to the book A Course in Miracles, which
right.
has been just so wonderful, unbelievable. But see, the thing is, my mom, she used to laugh all the time, and I wanted to lift her spirits. And she happens to be a fan of, like, comedy. You know, she loved Richard Pryor. She loved Chris Rock. She loved Andrew Dice Clay, one of her favorites, you know, and he's pretty vulgar. So my question to you is, I wanted to really lift up her spirits and write, like, a funny Andrew Dice Clay type of poem for Mother's Day, and I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know who Andrew Dice Clay is, so I can't really make much of a comment. But, you know, there's a story. If Jeannie has she's got your phone number. If you receive texts on it, I'll gladly send it to you. There's a story that we usually read on Mother's Day that's really, it's quite humorously written, and it's about a woman who goes into the registrar's office to register a piece of property, and when she says she's a housewife, she's talked down to, and the whole turnaround of that. So if I have your permission, I'll send you a copy of that.
That'd
and that
be
might
wonderful.
Be a foundation for what you're
just
talking about doing. It might give you some ideas.
Yeah, well, just Andrew Dice Clay was known for saying dirty nursery rhymes. Was his thing. Yeah. So
okay.
and yeah, it was silly. So I wrote, and he was very vulgar. So I wrote Happy Mother's Day, Hickory Dickory Dock.
Well, we don't want to do.
Wait
a minute. We're not interested in doing anything vulgar on the show. Okay. So if it's parallel with what he's doing, I'd rather let it go if you don't mind.
I just
Thank
disconnected
you.
Him.
Yeah.
Our next hand up is Michael Tatey, 770, you're on the air.
Welcome,
Hello.
Young man. Hey, good to hear your voice. How do you be?
I'm doing wonderful. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael.
Delighted to hear from you. Wondering, been in my mind since you were here visiting, and just been tapping in, sending energy in your direction, and wondering how you're doing.
Much appreciated. I've been wanting to call in for a bit, give you an update, and let you know how wonderful I am doing, and much appreciative of my visit there.
Tell us what's happening. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, just doing well. And, of course, lots of questions, but truly wanted to just extend my appreciation for that wonderful three-day visit I had with you all. And, Ms. Michael, things are still
one of the things I was sharing. Good. One of the things I was sharing, Michael, last week, and I wasn't sure I had the details of it exactly, but the last time we talked, you had told me about the change in the status of headaches as a result of that mini-intensive. And so maybe you'd give us more accurate detail on where you were with headaches, what you've done about trying to deal with headaches, and then what happened as a result of that 3 days. And, of course, everything else you've been doing.
Sure, I've been doing a lot and pursuing a lot for many years. And back 4 or 5 years ago, I used to have headaches, and they would last sometimes up to 3 days and just quite intense. And been working at many things and had gotten that down quite extensively. However, before I came to see you last month, would still have a headache once or twice a month, would last a day, and is so much improved over a few years ago. However,
right.
I had one since I met with you, and you assisted me so much in the energy work and in your modalities. And that lasted for 3 hours. And
wow.
I'm trying to recall, that was a couple of weeks ago and nothing since, which is a wonderful role. So a great improvement. And like
That's
I said,
awesome.
Things are rolling very nicely. So just wanted to extend
if you go
that
back,
and, mm-hmm.
If you go back to the once or twice a month that would last for a day, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would the level of pain have been with those headaches generally?
In the 4 to 6 range.
Okay. And then the one that you have had since we worked, it diminished in 3 hours, what would the scale of that be?
Yeah, that's the only one, and I would say that's in the 1 to 2 range. Very, very low.
Oh, that's awesome. Nice, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so things are definitely moving in the right direction, and I'm certain my bone structure is working, moving in the right direction, and that's just really great.
Well, I hold that you had your last headache, and that from here on out, the structure of your cranium, your jaw, your teeth, your ability to speak, your ability to think, and the comfort in your tissue structure is just going to do improvement upon improvement upon improvement until it gets back to what it was designed to be originally, which was just feeling awesome and supporting you living in true physiological, mental, emotional joy.
Wonderful. I certainly appreciate that and looking forward to that myself. So very.
Yay. Well, any questions on your mind for today?
Oh, lots. I have something to share. I heard Robert Edward Grant. Have you ever listened to him? Does that name ring a bell?
No, I haven't heard of him.
He had said something, and it really brought me back to your work. He was explaining how everything that happens to us, we should well beyond on the course and say, why did I choose that happened? And it just popped in my mind. I wanted to share it with you. It brings me right back to the title of your book and your work. Why is this happening to me again? Why did I choose it? Why is this happening to me again? It's just interesting correlation.
Yeah, it fits perfectly. There's a line in my book that invites people to just think about, you know, what have I been doing in my life to produce mm-hmm. this result? And whatever it is, am I willing to face it and change it?
And change it, yeah. So powerful. So powerful, brother. Wow. Yeah, I'm
so go for it. What's the next thought you have on your mind?
In more and more people's work, I continue to make these connections and hearing things. So the next portion, I think you touched on it just a little bit earlier, is regulatory speech. And since I've been blessed to meet you and then Jeannie back almost 2 years ago now, and meet the many people that are also involved in your work. I had a long conversation with one recently, and it was noted, and I realized this, that my regulatory speech is not where it needs to be. And you and I have had that conversation in the past also. So that's a challenge, and it's something I believe I want to tackle, you know, in a fairly soon manner. So how does one do that? What are the procedures? For instance, the person I was speaking with that knows your work very well was suggesting worksheets. And yeah, done a bit of that work, although I believe I've heard you say there's a course in regulatory speech, and I'm wondering if that might be a better option, because I'm one that wants to get right out there and tackle things. So wondering your thoughts about my personal challenge with regulatory speech and the best way and an efficient way to tackle that and move forward even up to another level.
Well, you'll notice that since you become involved in this work, the way you think about things has changed significantly, right?
Yes, it has.
Say, for instance, something like family conflicts or your own health or when you look at the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Your thinking's changed, right?
Most definitely.
So when your thinking changes, your speech changes, because speech is just a representation of thought. And regulatory speech as an idea is the recognition that the thoughts we think, if we start from the baseline, let's start with physics. Let's talk about Albert Einstein. On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. Mm-hmm. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So Einstein says, matter doesn't exist. And then he says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. So once you realize those two things are true, the speech about separateness begins to disappear. And the speech about how we think of ourselves in relationship to what appear to be others who are in truth single ourselves in our own body, literally, when they talked about, the ancients talked about the mystical body of Christ, they weren't talking about some airy-fairy pie-in-the-sky thing. They were saying the same thing as Einstein. We look in our brains, and our brains generate these pictures that we're separate because our language tells us we're separate. In fact, if you look at child psychology, they'll tell us that it's a really important part of development to realize that you're not part of everything around you and speak of yourself as a separate entity. It's the teaching of the world. If Einstein's correct, what does that teaching mean? It means that we're being taught to lie to ourselves. And we do it with thought. And, of course, the representation of thought is speech. Now, I'll go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told by the Greeks that it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, And what it says in Aramaic is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Now let's take that into the cell biologist laboratory and listen to Bruce Lipton, cell biologist, taught in several different medical schools. And he shows that in the lab, when we think a thought, we take that non-physical energy, Einstein was talking about, it's all energy. We reduce it in its rate of vibration by bringing it into the world of thought. And now all of a sudden there's a molecule in our bodies, solidified, becoming matter. That molecule circulates around, and the molecule is nothing but a solidified piece of mind energy, a solidified thought. That mind energy circulates around in your structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the cell. Now let's imagine that we are microbes inside of the cell, and we hear this neuropeptide, this solidified thought, a relatively solidified thought, land on a receptor site on our cell, and we look up and we watch, and what we would see from inside the cell is what you and I would call chemistry. Mind energy is becoming flesh. Literally, in the cell, that neuropeptide, when inserted in the cell, becomes chemistry. Now, Bruce Lipton talks about that as the cell replicates the neuropeptide. I don't believe, you know, my background's in electronics, and, you know, the signal comes into the TV set. The TV does not replicate the signal that comes into the antenna. The TV reflects the signal that comes in. I don't believe this cell is replicating, but it is reflecting what has been inserted into it as what we call chemistry. And our words are reflective of that. In the whole healing process, you know, to me, one of the major asks that I hear Yeshua making, and I think this is part of the ask that he did with that group of disciples who the word in the scripture speaks about, many of them walked away saying, too hard a saying, who can understand, and they never came back. But my take is, the ask is that we develop the skill of reversing that whole process of thoughtlessly letting thoughts go through our minds. You know, there's a thought on a billboard, and that becomes our thought, and the thought becomes our speech, and the speech becomes our physiology, and what goes into our physiology in speech regulates our behavior. And if the billboard's about, you know, hey, look, drink this wonderful fluid that will get you drunk and destroy your body and your relationships, and people put that into speech, and it regulates their behavior. So the ask I hear is, learn to enter into, to move into your own cellular structure, become receptive to whatever is stored there, not only from your own speech, from your own neuropeptide activity, but that of your generations that are stored there. Learn to bring that material, which sometimes is very traumatic and very painful, horrific. You know, you look historically at what's happened to people in our bloodlines and what's in our structures, and some of it's pretty heavy duty. The ask is to learn to reverse that process, to literally pull those energetic patterns out of the cell, be sensitive to them, develop the ability to read what they mean, develop the brain cells to understand what they mean, and be able to embrace them while you keep love present in your mind. And what will happen, that which has become flesh in you will dissolve. On the way out, it is not going to be Dr. Feelgood, because the energy going in created certain symptoms, and the energy coming out is going to create exactly the same symptoms. The symptoms of disease and the symptoms of healing are absolutely identical. One of the reasons, my take, why people shy away from and really don't want to do worksheets is because that's what the worksheet empowers us to do. And most people don't want to look there, don't want to deal with that, don't want to feel that, don't want to pull out of their own structure what is literally energetically killing them. Oh, they want to, but they want it done for them. And they don't want to have to go through the process and the experience of dealing with those things. So my offering would be that if you went back to day one, to the first radio show we did 14 years ago, and you listened 5 days a week, an hour a day for the last 14 years, the only thing I would address would be your question. Here's how you do it. It's every skill we've got. It's every tool we've got. So it's the commitment. It's the power person worksheet. It's the codependence worksheet. It's the forgiveness process. It's the still point breathing. It's the responsibility communication. I mean, every tool has as its objective being able to own, you know, take a look at why has your tissue structure changed after all those years of chasing, and you shared with me you were in the airline industry, so you flew back and forth all over the country to all kinds of exports. Why did your chemistry change, quote-unquote chemistry change, more in 3 days than it had in those years? What happened? The other aspect of it is to be able to open our physiology and access, and usually it takes a measure of support, access and remove those energetic patterns. And oftentimes when energetic patterns of pain and trauma come up, the habit, the generational habit, is just to fall into harmony with them, act as though they're true and ours, and function out of them. So having support there, part of the process is in doing, like, say, for instance, something like that three-day intensive or this radio show, everything we do is how do we work to undo what never belonged and not get trapped in it when it comes up. Mm-hmm. So every tool, I mean, that's been the only objective of everything we've done for a half a century in this regard. It's a wonderful passage in A Course in Miracles where it talks about words and how we try to use words to represent things and do things that words weren't meant to represent and weren't meant to do. And what the Course talks about is that words, one, it informs us what words are. Let's say, for instance, you and I have an interaction, and I meet you, we have this interaction, and my mind produces a picture, paints on the inside of my eyeballs, based on what you resonate in me, I see a body, and I think I'm looking at you. If I were actually seeing you, I'd see a whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. I would not see a body. There's no such thing as a body. Einstein, there's no such thing as matter. Mm-hmm. But my brain, according to what you resonated me, produces a picture, a construct called perception. And that perception, I think I'm looking at it out there, but the truth is it's painted on the inside of my eyeballs. And that's my brain's representation of you. Now, if you do something that resonates, something that I'm in denial and dissociation of, and up comes my blaming of you because I'm in denial, then I'm going to see a picture where you did to me what it is that hurt me. And when I realize that that picture is a construct painted on the inside of my eyeballs by my brain, I take responsibility for it and I dissolve it. I bring the root of it forward, literally out of the deepest parts of my cellular structure, and in the presence of love, because I'm in the practice of holding love present, I can allow those energetic patterns to move forward. And rather than getting lost in them, rather than reinforcing them, rather than doing what my generations have done, and that is just jump on it and go, you know, play it out like it's all your fault, I'm going to own and move those patterns through and out of me using each and every one of the tools until I become free of it. And what the Course talks about words, that the only real use, and if you listen over the years to this radio show, you'll notice that when somebody comes on the show and they've got a challenge, basically what I do is I simply point out how their words are in error. And that the error isn't the truth about them or the people they're in relationship with. And when we can correct those errors, then we think differently about them and about ourselves. Our mind energy is different. Our literal, what we, in the world where we call it chemistry, our chemistry is different. And the descriptors we use for those energies moving in us, called our words, change. They shift. So it's a whole process. It isn't, you know, I point over into this corner, I go there, if you just do what's over there in that corner. But what the ancients said, understanding that in order to produce this hologram in the mind called reality and this interaction, this world that we experience and live in, it takes a giant, giant amount of input from 1,000 different directions. Like, for instance, they did a research project in a prison. Actually, they did this in a few different prisons over the years. But they were trying to deal with violence in the prisons. And one of the things they found had the most profound effect on getting rid of violence in the prisons was they removed sugar from the diet of the inmates. Removing sugar will change your speech. That's called being holy. And holy isn't being down on our knees with our hands folded. It's understanding each impact, each aspect of life that energetically produces the result we call our perception, our words, etc. And it's developing the skill and the ability to address from every direction, literally every energetic influence, and one by one move in the direction of correction. Not necessarily correct, because oftentimes if people, let's say there's a generational pattern, let's take that idea of sugar. Sugar is an anesthetic. Sugar is a drug. People get addicted to the drug. If we get a person that's a heavy-duty sugar addict, and they all of a sudden when they cut themselves off of all sugar and say, that's it, I'm never going to eat sugar again, they will go through some horrendous symptoms, and they will probably, like the pendulum swings way over to one side, when that pendulum starts to stop in the other direction, bang, they're going to get lost in it again. So, you know, doing shift and change in moderation in every way, shape, and form, what do you do with your dietary regimen? What do you do with your thinking? What do you do with your breathing? What do you do with the water you eat, the food you eat? Or, pardon me, the water you drink, the food you eat, the thoughts you think? The energetic patterns you expose yourself to. Now, one of the things that Jeannie and I often do, like we have a television in our bedroom, and at night we'll watch a movie. And oftentimes we'll watch some pretty violent stuff. There was a time when I would not go in and watch, I would not watch a violent movie. But at the end of the evening, when we've watched this movie, we will both join in asking Rukka, whatever was resonated in us through this film, we ask you as we sleep, as we breathe, to remove it and free us from it. Mm-hmm. So even watching those movies become an opportunity to look at, what does this resonate in me? What do I need to forgive? And can I hold a space of love? Can I stay connected to myself as active present love as I watch this happen on the screen, or I watch this happen in my life? And, you know, it's a constitutional growth. It's a transition. Literally, you know, if you listen to Yeshua, he says, in order for you, being, to live, love, created essence that you are, to live, you, non-being, hostility and fear-based self, have to die. It's a transition. It's transitioning from the self that the world has pounded into us and taught we are, you know, the power person dynamics, you're broken, there's something wrong with you, no, don't you dare cry, or I'll give you something to cry for, you know, through all the messages, all the mind energy that comes in and literally becomes our physiology and literally reflects when resonated into activity as a false image of ourselves, that self has got to go. It's got to be dissolved. Well, how do you do that, Michael? Go back to day one of the radio show, and I never talk about anything else. That it's every tool applied in every arena.
My guess is that all my dysfunctional thinking over years, and maybe even in utero, passed on from mom, was stored in the areas that you worked on energetically when I was with you. And that work released at least some of that trauma to have a more functional life at this point. Would that be fair?
Yep. That would be. And it works at a level where nobody could do that for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get that kind of shift in physiology. And it also works with the core of the antenna of the body to realign it so it comes into its proper range of motion, which, because at the core of it, there are places where we hold so tightly that on one's own, it's next to impossible to get to open, or it's a very, very long-term process. And so moving into that level of alignment and intensity is what, I don't know how to quantify it, but takes people, what might take 20 years to do can be done in 3 days. Or what, I mean, I've watched people where I've used those tools and, you know, tools that I don't use in a normal intensive because it's not just not something that can be done in that setting. And I watch people make changes that most people would never make in their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then another big part of the process is the willingness. Am I willing to go there? Am I willing to feel this and move through this? You know, one of the, back about 43 years, whatever it was, I discovered, for me, the still point breathing process. That's when I accidentally came across using the breath that way and went, wow, this is profound. And in that session that I did with myself, I probably spent, I don't know, somewhere between an hour and 2 hours in still point. From there, in my medical training and, you know, things that I would do, the seminars and such that I would do over the last four plus decades, is I've always looked for what takes people into still point, what enhances the still point. And that's what became the energy field work that we teach in our intensives. And that's what I use when I'm working with people one-on-one. And, you know, some of the tools that I use with you in that 3-day, you know, one-on-one intensive are not things that I could teach in a normal intensive. It's just not,
right.
You know, people need more medical training and such. It's just not something that you can hand to anybody.
So the idea of why, how I got in this situation I find myself in life, and many others, if not all others, to some degree, we have
absolutely
to do the work.
Absolutely, all of us,
yeah. And we have to do the work to come out of that, to put that behind us and move forward. And a huge part of this, it seems, is our speech from dysfunctional thinking.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. And it's changing the mind energy.
Changing the mind energy. And I see where worksheets definitely do that and experience that, thankfully. So what would be, well, first thing I got is the regulatory speech, is that a separate course or is that a collection of courses? I'm still wondering where that
regulatory speech, the focus on regulatory speech comes in our Laws of Living Intensive.
Okay, so it's in the Laws of Living. Okay.
It's not a separate course, but it's a focal point of much of Laws of Living.
Okay. So without taking that at the moment, the best way to continue to improve my thinking is with the worksheet process. And
every tool we've given you.
I was just going to say also the mind shifters and
yes.
things of that line. Got it.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Since in the past we've had the conversation that many of the things that you're dealing with are family dynamics and relationship issues. And we've had the mm-hmm. conversation that there is the codependence to interdependence self-study intensive. That would enhance your acquaintance with the whole picture on a totally different level than, the pieces that we've gotten, when we've connected and moved through things over the years. That becomes a more specific, directed presentation of how the material we do on codependence to interdependence, healing through relationships, communication, how those things relate as a whole. So I think that if you're looking for, what's the next step I can do, I would mm-hmm. suggest, yes, Laws of Living would be wonderful, and we don't have one scheduled at this point. I don't know when we're going to do another one. We've talked about doing one online, but we just haven't had enough demand for it. But I think mm-hmm. you'd find stepping into the codependence to interdependence communication practicum. And that's 90 hours of video work. That's a systematic presentation of the whole. In the same way that Laws of Living is a systematic presentation of the whole body of work from the perspective of law, which in Aramaic means the way things work, codependence to interdependence intensive is a systematic presentation of the way the whole body of work relates to relationships and how we get stuck in our interactions in relationships. So I think that would be, if you're looking for, there's something I want to step into that I can move forward in a powerful way, I think that would be your next step.
Yes, I appreciate that. And that's where I'm thinking. And to come back to Bristol at some point where we can talk more about that. I would like to
yes.
experience even next level with your one-on-one work. It was amazing. And as what is the term you've used in the past? And I kind of chuckle, but I actually experienced that. It's not Dr. Feelgood. There were times during that it wasn't Dr. Feelgood, but what was on the other side of that was amazing. And
let me ask
again,
a question.
Very grateful. Yes.
In terms of your experience, and I'm thinking this because I just finished working with a gentleman a few days ago, and this gentleman has been acquainted with the work for many years, and one of the things he had been noticing over the period of the last 15 years or so was that his short-term memory was disappearing. It was a major concern for him, so it's something he'd worked on. And literally, the last day we completed, he came by and visited here. We sat and chatted a little bit before he left. And he noticed himself remembering words that otherwise he would be fishing for that his short-term memory wasn't holding on to. And so I'm asking that question, just wondering if you've noticed anything with memory I'm kind of, you know, starting to survey what kind of results people are getting. Have you noticed anything with memory since we worked?
I will
Or maybe
consider
a better way to ask
the
question might be, Edward, do you have any challenges in that regard?
Well, I know I did in the past. To answer your question, since the three-day intensive, I've not really noticed anything. I'm going to ponder on that a little bit more in the next few days, and not something I've really thought about. However, I would like to take this back a year to maybe a little bit more ago. I was struggling, and I'm sure you see the difference as much as we've spoken on and off the show. I would be struggling with a concentration and things along those lines, which somewhat related to the memory. And that has improved greatly over the last year. And a lot of that I'm
awesome.
Sure is doing this work and, you know, experiencing the healing from it. So can't say anything definitive over the last month, but definitely over the last year or so.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is the ability to relax more and just get into that quiet space. Really helps.
Well, when you realize that thinking, concentration, has to do with the firing of brain cells, and if there are energetic patterns that we haven't dealt with that are resonating around us and we haven't worked through them, that's going to affect everything to do with thinking and function and concentration and, you know, ability to get things done. Because when you clear out the gunk that's, you know, just muddying up the waters, you know, the water's a whole lot clearer, it's a whole lot easier to swim. So,
I like that.
So that makes perfect sense.
I like that. Yeah, much different person than almost 2 years ago. I can feel it, sense it, and lots.
And
lots
think about the
things.
Relationships. Yeah, think about the relationships that have been a challenge to you in the past, and just look at how your conversation has changed in those relationships. Mm-hmm. And you shared some of that with me. We had some challenges,
yes,
with your brother. You shared with me and you know, notice the change in your regulatory speech. Your conversation with your brother changed totally the last time you saw him from what it had been, as I understand it, like forever before then. That's your
right.
regulatory speech changing.
Right. Big difference. Very nice.
Sweet. How awesome.
It is. Yeah. Well, switching gears a bit, and I appreciate bringing me through this situation today and looking more at the codependence and interdependence. So I thought about something else, and I'm not quite sure what hit my memory on this one. But
right.
I believe I heard you mention in the past was in the stories in the Bible that Yahshua really spoke in parables. Do you think the other stories in the Bible are possible parables? And what I'm really thinking about is the Adam and Eve story, for instance. Do you or others ever relate that to being a parable in itself?
My offering would be that the whole of the scriptures are an allegory for life. Were there actual factual historic events in it? Yes. But in each case, there are layers and levels of meaning. And when you can, you know, an event happens in the scriptures. Was it historical? Well, it looks like it probably was. We don't know 100%. But if I'm sitting here And, you know, King Hezekiah had an interaction with one of his slaves, and all of a sudden, you know, this change, and I sit there and I'm breathing, and I go, wow, I've done to that. I've treated people around me just like King Hezekiah did, and wow, what a mistake mm-hmm. that's been. Whew, I can breathe into that, and I can feel the grief of what I did and process through that grief. That story just turned into a metaphor for my life. And when I can receive those life lessons, I'll benefit from them in a whole different way than everything needs to be literal in ABC. You know, and in particular, the Aramaic language. The Aramaic language, first of all, as languages go, and I don't remember the stats of it, but there are very few words in the Aramaic language. Mm-hmm. And there are idioms on top of idioms on top of idioms on top of idioms. And if I don't know the meaning of an idiom, and I try to take the literal words, it doesn't make any sense. And there are just so many places where when you have the idiom, you know, a camel can go through the eye of a needle easier than a rich man. Like, would it go? I mean, how stupid is it that a camel is going to go through the eye of a needle? Until you realize that, you know, Jerusalem was a gated city and there were hospitable mm-hmm. people. They didn't want to leave people out there in the desert by themselves. It could be dangerous. So they had a gate, a small gate. It was called the Eye of the Needle. And it was so small that an invading army couldn't get in and attack them, but they wanted to be hospitable. And if a neighbor came, you know, even if it were an enemy, that the neighbor could get in the city. But what the neighbor would have to do would be unload all of the luggage that was on the camel. They'd have to force the camel down on its knees and force it through the eye of the needle, the gate of the city.
Through the gates, yes.
I mean, the whole Aramaic is filled with stuff like that, and people are still trying to figure out how you're going to get your camel through a knitting needle or a sewing needle.
It's so beautiful.
So the Aramaic language is just rife with those, and without that knowledge, there's just so many things that just don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. That to me is one of the things that convinced me of the primacy of the Aramaic, because things that just you take it in Greek and you go, how do I get the count? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But then when you go back and you go, now it makes sense. It's clear that the Greek with thinking about a physical camel going through a sewing needle is not the meaning. And therefore, the prime, the original, had to be the Aramaic. And there are just so many cases where when you start looking time after time after time, this statement that doesn't make much or any real sense in Greek, go back to the Aramaic and understand the idiom, and it's like, oh, well, that's pretty simple and straightforward.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to rethink about it, and I appreciate you sharing that. And the reason I asked is that has become where I personally, what I also personally believe about the Bible, and after studying it many years, way before we even met, I now look at it differently, and even differently since learning more about the Aramaic, which I'm grateful to learn from your work. I was out on the lawn. I took about an hour the other day during the eclipse, and I was out there just grounding on the lawn and experiencing the eclipse, and I thought about the Adam and Eve story, and this is, I don't know if this is way out there or not, but I thought, okay, that's a story. Where is it going? What am I learning from this? And I thought about the two hemispheres of the brain, one side being, from my understanding, predominantly a masculine energy side, and the other being predominantly the feminine. And I'm just
exactly.
Had this thought, is that the Adam and Eve story? And out of that is that where the ego situation came from that story? I don't know, just tossing it out there and seeing what you may take of that, or is it way out there in left field?
Well, I had never particularly thought of it in those terms, but that makes perfect sense. I think that's a powerful way to look at that story and understand it on a whole different level, and especially to be able to apply it.
Wow. It just hit me, and it made sense in this end. I just wanted to share it and see what thoughts you might have.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Hmm. Amazing.
You know, you look at people who are still trying to prove that there were 7 24-hour days in creation, and the book that they're reading from says, oh, to the creator, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. Why mm-hmm. does it have to be 24-hour days? A day in the creative process, and in Aramaic, the phrase that's been translated as a day is more appropriately translated as a time period. It could have been 12 million years. Mm-hmm. Why are we arguing about that? Is there something to learn here instead of trying to be right? Is there something we can apply to ourselves and improve our ability to function truly as humans rather than arguing about, well, I believe this, I believe this? Well, go for it, and maybe there's another level. But, yeah, you've triggered some thought for me, and I will definitely spend some time with that idea of the left and right hemispheres. And you know, the left side of the brain being literal ABC, 7 days, and the right mm-hmm. hemisphere being metaphorical, symbolic, comprehending on a whole different level, and as Adam and Eve as coming from that source, and then to me, ultimately being able to integrate them makes perfect sense. So thank you for that thought. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, I'm grateful to be able to think about it, discuss it, and have this opportunity on the show to speak about these things. And as well as everything you shared today, it's wonderful, and we'll be more in touch on this, and appreciate you all very much and the work.
Awesome, good sir. It's a delight to chat with you, and I'm so glad you're free of those headaches. I'm blessed. It's something that's never been a challenge for me, but I can identify with people who did have, and it's a tough way to go through a day. So glad you're alleviated of that one.
Tough way to go through a good portion of the week where I was about 45 years ago. And
yeah.
Come a long way since, and I'm looking forward to this new road. It's going to be wonderful. It's been for a couple of years now, and increasingly getting much better. So very grateful to you all, and for the time and discussion today.
All right, my friend. Delight to hear from you. Extending love in your direction. Appreciate you, and I'm sure that everybody benefited from your thoughts today. So.
Blessings and love, and hello to everyone, and all the best. We'll talk again, Michael and Jeannie. Thank you.
All right, take care. Lots of love. And we're down to the last minute or so I'm just going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. Hope that you each choose to create the best year yet of your eternal lives, with each one becoming successfully better. Moving onward and upward, and looking at every thought, every bit of mind energy that could drag you down, that could create chemistry that would deteriorate your physiology, and literally on a minute-to-minute basis, looking at when those things are moving in you, being able to step back from your own mind, become the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and just observe it in operation. And if it isn't love, forgive it. Get rid of it. Dump it. Your physiology doesn't need it. Assalamu alaikum. Blessings. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.